Go.
Good morning. My name is Nancy Grady, and I am a Dame of Malta from the New Jersey area. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this morning for our July Spiritual Outreach Call. We are grateful to have Monsignor Frank Caldwell with us this morning to discuss Mary under her title as Our Lady of Mount Carmel. It is a title I suspect most of us have heard many times but may not know that much about. Monsignor Frank Caldwell is pastor at Cure of Arts Parish in Merrick, Long Island, and has accompanied the American Association on 18 Lord's pilgrimages since 1991. He became a magistral chaplain in the American Association in 2004 and is known and loved by our members as pastoral, generous with his time, an excellent speaker, and a great supporter of the work of the order. Monsignor Caldwell's kindness and gentle manner provide a great backdrop to his fierce commitment to the church and to his pastoral role and his dedication to the Knights and Dames in the Order of Malta. Good morning, Monsignor Caldwell, and thank you for being with us today.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for that beautiful introduction, Nancy, and welcome to all of you for taking the time to listen in to this spiritual outreach call entitled Preparing for the Feast Day of Our Lady of Mount Carmel, which is 11 days from now. Actually, the Feast of Mount Carmel won't be observed this year because it falls on a Sunday, which always takes precedence unless it's a major Christological feast, such as the Transfiguration, and since that day falls on a Sunday this year, it usurps the 18th Sunday of the year. So the primary Marian feast outside of Advent and Lent is the Assumption, and that too would take precedence over a Sunday in ordinary time, but this year it comes on a Tuesday, so it has its own feast day, its own day. Two other Marian feasts, the Immaculate Conception and the Annunciation, are also solemnities, but since they fall during Advent and Lent respectively, those feasts are transferred to the next day, December 9th and 26th. So that's a brief explanation as to why people ask, how come you don't always hear anything mentioned at some of the Marian feast days when they fall in conjunction with either Major Saints Day, Sundays, or other celebrations? So sometimes, such as Our Lady of Palermo, folks might not know of devotion to Mary under Our Lady of Palermo if they weren't members of the Order of Malta, but we have a special devotion to her. Fortunately, for us as Catholics, there are so many avenues to Jesus through Mary, under numerous mantles and descriptions and devotions of the Blessed Mother's guidance, protection, and inspiration, which help us, especially as Catholics, to hear Mary's direct orders through the Gospel itself, her clear instructions to her Son, do whatever he tells you. All devotion to Mary, in my opinion, begins with that guidance, that mandate, do whatever he tells you in Cana at his first miracle, which launched Jesus' ministry. So before exploring Our Lady of Mount Carmel, I'd like to make a reference to yesterday's 4th of July holiday and begin with the Gospel passage to offer not just a Marian, but also a Christological connection, since everything in Scriptures ultimately point to Jesus, including and especially his mother Mary. So this is a reading from the Gospel of Matthew, and it was yesterday's Gospel on the 4th of July. As Jesus got into a boat, his disciples followed him. Suddenly, a violent storm came up on the sea so that the boat was being swamped by waves, but he was asleep. They came and woke him, saying, "Lord, save us, we are perishing." He said to them, "Why are you terrified, O you of little faith?" Then he got up, rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was great calm. The men were amazed and said, "What sort of man is this, whom even the winds and the sea obey?" That Gospel story just happened to sequentially fall on July 4th, yesterday, and it's a good message for us as Catholics that although we celebrate our independence, like the apostles, we are dependent, totally dependent on the Lord as one nation, indeed every nation, under God to get us through the storms and the challenges of human life in general. Politically, it's a great blessing, obviously, and a gift to be free from oppression or tyranny as our country liberated itself from a crown far away 247 years ago and highlighted on Independence Day. But it's spiritually dangerous to be independent of God and from God. And to disregard his law is, in fact, the quickest way to squander the political liberty we savor and toast every day, especially yesterday. There is a God, and we are not he. His way, not our way, is the path to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Many people ask me often, you know, what's wrong with our world and our country today? Why do we seem to be astray? And the answer I give is because, you know, we've forgotten God, very often forgotten God and his commandments, just like the apostles forgot in their panic and everything else that God was right there with them in the boat. It's no wonder that I am the Lord your God and do not place other gods before me is the first of the Ten Commandments. No wonder freedom of religion is the first of those placed first in the Bill of Rights. When we, our country, our society, our culture, play God, when we assume divine prerogatives of sovereignty over life and death, and now even over gender, when society ignores, forgets, disregards, or snickers at faith and religion, our independence is in peril. They asked Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War, is God on your side? He responded, I'm more committed to making sure I'm on his. If Lincoln were in the boat on that turbulent Sea of Galilee, I think he would have said, it's more important to stay with the Lord and to try to see him and stay with him than to give up and surrender. Independence from God invites a slavery to a willful self and the whims of the times that fade quicker than a sparkler into sin. So while we celebrate our independence, we also acknowledge our utter dependence upon a God who shed his grace on us as people of God, and especially for us as Americans. So I think the first thing to consider for the topic at hand about Mount Carmel is its location and history. Almost every major diocese in the world has a parish dedicated to Mary under her title, A Lady of Mount Carmel. We have a church here on Long Island in Patchogue, Our Lady of Mount Carmel, Brooklyn Diocese, New York, several Mount Carmel churches, and especially in both Spanish and Italian countries as well. But Mount Carmel itself is located in northwestern Israel near the city of Haifa, near the Mediterranean coast and west of Galilee. If you made a pilgrimage to the Holy Land, it's very often on the schedule, usually at the beginning after leaving Ben-Gurion Airport on the way to Galilee. The name, dating back to biblical times, is derived from the Hebrew kerem, meaning vineyard or orchard, and it attests to the mountain's fertility even in ancient times. So if there were such things, you know, as spiritual PowerPoints or places on earth, Mount Carmel would have to qualify certainly as one of them. Mount Carmel has been literally a crossroads for trade and commerce, for multiple religious traditions, pagan, Jewish, and Christian, military strife, monastic life, biblical archaeology, and now modern-day urban living. There is something for everyone on Mount Carmel, which is perhaps why it has a long and sometimes contentious history. Mount Carmel is even mentioned as a holy mountain in Egyptian records 16 centuries before Christ. As a high place, it was a center of idol worship, and most notably, its outstanding reference in the Bible is as the scene of the prophet Elijah's confrontation with the false prophets of Baal in 1 Kings chapter 18. So that's the location and the importance of Mount Carmel in biblical and biblical history. In a way, as I see it, and preparing for this talk today, it's an anticipation of what would eventually happen hundreds of years later on another mountain some 50 miles away on Mount Tabor when God revealed Jesus as his beloved son. So Christian hermits began living on Mount Carmel as early as the 6th century. the Carmelites were founded in 1150, and they received their first rule or laws of regulations governing their conduct around the year 1206 to 1214. Their monastery that was rebuilt in 1828 is near the traditional site of Elijah's miracle as recorded in 1 Kings. By the 13th century, they became known as Brothers of Our Lady of Mount Carmel, which suggested that they saw Mary not only as mother, but also as sister. And that reference to sister was and is a reminder that Mary is very close to us as the daughter of God, and devotion to her can help us to be authentic sons and daughters of God. Since the 15th century, popular devotion to Our Lady of Mount Carmel has centered on the scapular of Our Lady of Mount Carmel, also known as the brown scapular. There's also a green scapular, which is different. The green scapular is sometimes used for folks who are considering conversion to the faith or as an introduction to devotion to Mary, and is more focused upon the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Several times a month as a priest, I'm asked to bless scapulars, but the brown scapular of Our Lady of Mount Carmel is much more popular. Traditionally, Mary is said to have given the scapular to an early Carmelite named Simon Stock, who lived from 1165 to 1265. The solemn liturgical feast of Our Lady of Mount Carmel was probably first celebrated in England in the latter part of the 14th century. Its object was thanksgiving to Mary, the patroness of the Carmelite order, for the benefits of intercession she had accorded to it through the difficult early years of its inception. The Carmelite order was the only religious order to be started in the Crusader states. In the 13th century, some of its people migrated west to England, setting up a chapter and being documented there about the year 1241, 1242 or so. A tradition first attested in the late 14th century says that Simon Stock, believed to be an early English prior general or global superior of the Carmelite order, soon after his migration to England, had a vision of the Blessed Virgin Mary, in which he gave him the brown scapular. This formed part of the Carmelite habit after around the year 1287. In Simon Stock's vision, Mary promised that those who died wearing the scapular would be saved. This, of course, is a devotional, what we would call sacramental, such as ashes and rosaries and crucifixes, a sacramental signifying for the wearer's consecration to Mary and some type of affiliation with the Carmelite order, not as a member of the order, but an affiliation of sorts. It symbolizes Mary, Our Lady of Mount Carmel's special protection, and calls the wearers to consecrate themselves to her in a special way. Based on available historical documentation, and there are some historical disputes about all this, the liturgical feast of Our Lady of Mount Carmel didn't originally have a specific association with the brown scapular or the tradition of Simon Stock's vision of the Blessed Virgin Mary. This tradition grew gradually, as did the cult of Simon Stock. That latter was documented in Bordeaux, France, where St. Simon Stock died. Some historians have questioned whether Simon Stock had the vision of Mary and the scapular. Some historians even question even if he was officially canonized and celebrated at the church. Nevertheless, when the Carmelite convent of Isford, England, was restored, a relic of St. Simon Stock was placed there in 1951. The saint's feast day, St. Simon Stock, is celebrated in places dedicated to him, and it's on May 16th, 3 months before the Feast of Our Lady of Mount Carmel. Also associated with Our Lady of Mount Carmel was a papal bull saying that there was a Sabbatine privilege associated with devotion to the saint that is, until the late 1970s, part of the Catholic liturgy mentioned the scapular devotion. In my research for this spiritual conference today, I read that Vatican II resulted in scrutiny of the Feast of Our Lady of Mount Carmel, as well as that of St. Simon Stock, because of some historical uncertainties about its origins. The liturgies were revised, and in the 21st century, neither even in the Carmelite proper makes reference to the scapular. But none of those historical skepticisms diminish the impact and the importance of devotion to Mary through her title, Our Lady of Mount Carmel, our focus today. For example, in Spain and other Spanish-speaking countries, there has been particular devotion to Our Lady of Mount Carmel, who has been adopted as a patron saint of several places and as many Catholic-majority countries. In addition, Carmen or Maria del Carmen have been popular given names for girls in Spanish-speaking countries. A festival known as Maracha Carmen is held in the Highland District of Peru, featuring a procession with the Virgin and traditional dances. Veneration of the Virgin del Carmel, often associated with Stella Maris, is particularly strong in the coastal towns of Spain. The feast day of Our Lady of Mount Carmel is celebrated for 10 days each July, not too far from where I am now in Williamsburg, the Williamsburg neighborhood of Brooklyn, New York, where approximately a 65-foot-tall giglio, a tower with the statue of Our Lady of Mount Carmel, is fixed atop it and lifted and paraded on multiple dates throughout the festival in July. The festival culminates the liturgical feast on the feast on July 16th. So what about this devotion? This devotion to Mary under the title Our Lady of Mount Carmel? Well, the Carmelites consider the Blessed Virgin Mary to be the perfect model of the interior life of prayer and contemplation to which the Carmelites aspire, as well as a model of virtue in the person who was closest to the life of Jesus Christ. She is seen as one who points Christians most surely to Jesus. As she said at the wedding, do whatever he tells you. Carmelites look upon the Virgin Mary as their spiritual mother. The Stella Maris Monastery, the Star of the Sea on Mount Carmel, named after the traditional title, is considered the spiritual headquarters of the order. St. Mary Magdalene di Piazzi, we have a relic of her in our chapel here at Curia Vars, is a revered authority on Carmelite spirituality, and she wrote that devotion to Our Lady of Mount Carmel means a special call to the interior life, which is preeminently a Marian life. Our Lady wants us to resemble her, not only in our outward vesture, but far more importantly, in heart and spirit. If we gaze into Mary's soul, we shall see that grace in her has flowered into a spiritual life of incalculable wealth, a life of recollection, of prayer, an uninterrupted obligation to God, and continual contact and intimate union with Him. Mary's soul is a sanctuary reserved for God alone, where no human creature has ever left its trace, where love and zeal for the glory of God and the salvation of mankind reign supreme. So those who want to live their devotion to Our Lady of Mount Carmel must try to follow Mary into the depths of her interior life. So Carmel is a symbol of the contemplative life, the life wholly dedicated to the quest of God, oriented toward intimacy with God, and the one who has best realized this highest ideals, Our Lady herself, Queen and Splendor of Carmel. So we all know that for centuries, great saints and theologians have promoted devotion to Our Lady of Mount Carmel and often championed the mystery of her Immaculate Conception, which was later defined as an infallible dogma of the Church. St. Teresa of Avila called Carmel the Order of the Virgin. St. John of the Cross credited Mary with saving him from drowning as a child, leading him to Carmel, and helping him to escape from prison. St. Teresa of the Child Jesus believed that Mary cured her from illness on her first communion. She dedicated her life to Mary, and during the last days of her life, she frequently spoke to Mary. Some of us heard about all this when we had a pilgrimage to St. Therese there in 2017. St. Teresa of Calcutta, although not a Carmelite herself, took the name of Teresa because both Teresa of Avila and Therese were so dedicated and devoted to Our Lady of Mount Carmel. So devotion to Our Lady of Mount Carmel is bound to the history and spiritual value of the Order of the Brothers of Blessed Virgin of Mount Carmel, and it is expressed through the scapular. Thus, whoever receives the scapular becomes a spiritual member of the Order and pledges him or herself to live according to its spirituality and in accordance with the characteristics to that state, her state, of life. The scapular, as a Marian habit or garment, is both a sign and a pledge, a sign of belonging to Mary and a pledge of her motherly protection, not only in this life, but also after death. As a sign is the conventional sign signifying three elements strictly joined. First, belonging to a religious family, particularly devoted to Mary, especially dear to Mary, the Carmelite Order. Second, consecration to Mary, devotion to and trust in her Immaculate Heart. And third, an urge to become like Mary by imitating her virtues above all, her humility, her chastity in spirit and prayer. And so let us end with a prayer. O most beautiful flower of Mount Carmel, fruitful vine, splendor of heaven, blessed mother of the Son of God, Immaculate Virgin, assist us in recognizing our utter dependence upon your Son to get us through the good times and the storms of life. Let us especially, as members of the Order of Malta, defend the faith and adhere to the commandments and do what he tells us, so that as we coexist with others in our secular world, we may challenge ourselves in the world to see, to call upon, and to recognize that God is in the boat with the church, with us, for the salvation of the world. Amen. Our Lady of Mount Carmel, pray for us. Thank you very much for being with us, and let us pray that Our Lady of Mount Carmel will also inspire us to be more devout members of the Order of Malta.
Thank you, Monsignor. Your talk has given us a better perspective on the importance and beauty of the Blessed Mother and her title of Our Lady of Mount Carmel. Thanks to all who have joined the call. The recording will be posted to the website within the next several days. Our next call is Wednesday, August 2nd. The topic is so close to so many as we search to find ways to help our relatives and friends who have left the church. Father Alfredo Hernandez, a chaplain from the Southeast Florida area, will speak on St. Monica, praying for those who have strayed. We look forward to your joining us on August 2nd. God bless you and have a great day.